We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The hottest Knicks tape you'll find online. Knicks all day. We bleed blue and orange. This is Knicks Fan TV, your one-stop shop for the ultimate New York Knicks fan experience.
Throws it down.
News, rumors, debates, post-game live streams featuring live callers.
Let's go Knicks, baby!
And now, your host, CP, the NY Fanatic.
Here we go. It is an absolute honor and a privilege to have one of the true legends of our time join me for an interview. A man who has achieved a great deal on the hardwood as well as off the court in the field of academia. Dr. Dick Barnett is a two-time NBA champion with our New York Knicks, known as one of the unsung heroes of that 1970 championship team, also winning a championship with the Knicks in 1973, an NBA All-Star. He also holds a PhD from Fordham University, a longtime teacher at St. John's University in the field of sports management. Dr. Dick Barnett joins us today. Dr. Barnett, thanks for joining us. How are you doing today, sir?
It's great to be with you, Casey. Looking forward to speaking with many of the fans of the New York Knicks.
Absolutely, sir. Thanks again for joining us. And starting with your early career, you picking up the game started with a ping pong balls and a tin can. Is that true? Can you elaborate on that?
That's true. And really, as I look back on it, it really helped me with my balance and with my touch.
You grew up in Gary, Indiana. And as you matriculated through the game, you would attend, you had some epic duels with Oscar Robertson. You would end up attending Tennessee A&I, which became Tennessee State University. At what point did you realize you were going to go all the way and pursue a career in the NBA? At what point did you feel like you were good enough to make it?
Well, I was like most young black men at that time, and I wanted to try to get to the NBA. And basically, what transpired over the years, my abilities on the playground became known at the Roosevelt High School in Gary, and they marvel. They say, "Well, if you can put a ping pong ball in a tin cup, you should be able to do something with a basketball." And really, my career really took off after that. And going to Tennessee State, and young people really can't appreciate that. I was at Tennessee State in the midst of the grip of segregation. Maybe you have read about George Wallace, the White Citizens Council, Lester Maddox, all of that comparable to the Proud Boys of today's era, where every young black male's life was in jeopardy just walking the streets of Nashville, Tennessee. I played in an era where there was no public accommodation. There were white signs and black signs to use the public restroom. So all of that was transpiring. I really didn't want to leave that out because it's so relevant to what is happening today with Black Lives Matter. They have taken up the baton of what we were doing 50 years ago and trying to regain their personhood and humanity like we were. Okay.
Basketball was certainly your passion, but did you also feel like it was sort of an escape from that reality where outside of the court, you're viewed as sort of less than human, you know, less rights, less privileges than others? Did you sort of view the game as an escape?
Well, it was an escape, but you got to understand in those days, and particularly as a Black athlete, many thought that all you were capable of was running, jumping, and competing. They didn't think that you could enter a classroom on a academic basis and pursue your dreams beyond basketball in that manner. And if I could, can I tell the Knicks fan, perhaps they've heard this before. I went to the court when I was in high school. I went to the court every day, honing my skills so I could make them pay. There were no off days and time to relax. My moves and my touch had to be exact. 4 to 5 hour cases that I put in, rain, sleet, and snow was part of the toll. At the end of this ritual, my game was bad. My skills were complete. Everybody could be had. I was the talk and toast of the town. Handshakes, publicity, and offers abound. But my dedication, Casey, had a regrettable flaw. My classwork was shoddy, and it was mostly my fault. So let me tell you what really changed my life around playing basketball. One of the most fortunate things that happened to me, and it seems counterproductive, but it was very positive. I ruptured my Achilles tendon. The chickens came home to roost at Madison Square Garden, October the 12th, 1967, when I ruptured my Achilles tendon. And they took me to the dressing room, Casey, and the doctor said, you might not ever play any more professional basketball. And I said, and he said, push my finger with your toe, and I couldn't move my foot. He said, well, we're gonna have to operate on you Tuesday, and that changed my life. Before, basketball was my mistress. Education became my lifelong romance after that.
And so with that, is that how you pursued academic excellence with that same vigor that you pursued excellence on the court?
No question about it. I went back to school and got I'm not a graduate of Tennessee State. I went back to school in the summer and received my bachelor's degree from Cal Poly of Pomona. I received my master's degree from New York University. And I received my doctorate degree from Fordham University. And what I wanted was an opportunity to be in the classroom like everybody else and prove that academically I was as sharp as anyone else.
Right. Now you've been able to accomplish so much both on the court and off. Hall of Fame in Tennessee, Indiana, Collegiate Hall of Fame, two-time NBA champion. As you said, a master's degree from NYU, doctor's degree from Fordham. What would you say is your greatest achievement in life?
Well, my greatest achievement in life was having the opportunity to change the perspective of my family when I came to the NBA. Obviously, we were not making the generational wealth that they're making today. But it was an opportunity I had never thought about. There was no history of people going to graduate school in my family. Gary, Indiana, it was a steel mill city. And basically, you finish high school. If you did, you went to the steel mills of Gary. This was a new situation in my life altogether. So one of the things that I determined at that point, I wanted to do something different with my life and really follow my dreams. And I've been on a dream paradigm every sense, and what I call a dream paradigm, which has five principles to that paradigm. Mm-hmm. The first principle is commitment. You got to be to follow your dreams, and I always say to young people, never say no. Mm-hmm. Never say no to your dream. The five C's, commitment every day, consciousness. As a black man in America, I understood without public accommodation and the issues of race in America, I understood what that meant. So I developed what I call the dream paradigm, consciousness. Commitment, conviction, courage, and control. Following those principles every day, reinforcing my dream to never give up hope in terms of what I wanted to achieve in life. And then ultimately, taking that paradigm out to young people, because there have been so many blood, sweat, and tears for me to get where, and I stand on a number of people's shoulders. Frederick Douglass, Martin Luther King, Fannie Lee Hamer, a number of people we stand on the shoulders to carry this forward. And now we're in the midst of George Floyd and his trial.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What would you say, and you mentioned some legendary figures of that time, especially in the sports world, you had Bill Russell, your counterpart, Jim Brown, and Ali being so outspoken during that time. It seems like the generation after that, the Jordans and the Magics, maybe shied away a little bit, maybe fearful of being ostracized or losing endorsements and hurting the brand. But it seems like today's athlete now, as we switch gears to LeBron and Carmelo Anthony, Dwayne Wade, seems like they're willing to be a bit more outspoken and come out and take a stand. What would you say to today's athlete in terms of how they should be participating in activism?
Well, I admire what they're doing, and also I admire what the commissioner has done. He's taken up the link of what David Stern had done 30 years before. And Adam Silver has taken up that and gone steps ahead. So in the bubble, Black Lives Matter was everywhere. And that's where how it should be. Those are the real issues that have to be confronted, particularly with voting and all the other issues that are on the table today. In fact, democracy is in jeopardy with a number of things transpiring.
On the 1970 championship team, a lot of fans or historians would call you one of the unsung heroes, one of the underappreciated teammates on that team. But they also consider that 1970 team the ultimate team. What did you feel like your role was on that team to help them win it?
Well, my role was just to perform as I had always performed. I was a consistent scorer, played defense, and everybody on the team at that time, Clyde, DeBuscher, Willis, everybody could work together. We had guys coming off the bench, Cassie Russell, Mike Ridden, Dave Stalwart. We had a number of guys that made a substantial contribution to what New York basketball was all about at that particular time.
When we look at Willis Reed's epic comeback and come out of the tunnel in Game 7, do you remember what you felt like, how you felt, or the overall atmosphere of Madison Square Garden?
Well, we knew that Willis was, if he could walk, he was going to play. So we were not astounded because he came. Obviously, he played a tremendous positional defense on Will, and I think if I recall, I think Willis made the first two baskets.
He did.
Is that right?
Yeah.
he made the first two baskets. I don't think he scored after that, but he didn't need to. Clyde had a world-beating game at that particular time. So it was something that we had been trying to achieve for years. And when the Boston Celtics dominated professional sports and professional basketball, obviously with Bill Russell and Sam Jones and Havlicek and Casey, they had an Auerbach, obviously was a great coach for the Boston Celtics.
Speaking of Clyde, he noted you as his idol when he came to the Knicks. What was your relationship like with Clyde, and how was he as the floor general of those teams?
No, our relationship was great. Yeah, in fact, I think Clyde could appreciate. I was about almost not quite 10 years older than Clyde, and obviously, I was very holistic, you might say, in taking care of myself physically, trying to stay in shape, never smoking or taking drugs or that kind of stuff. Just taking care of your body. And I told Clyde, you know, this is what you need to do. You already have the tools to be a great player, and you'll be around a long time taking care of yourself and working with others. And obviously that's what transpired.
When you won the championship in 1970, over the course of that time, even prior to, there was so much happening in the world. You had the Vietnam War and so many leaders assassinated between JFK, MLK, Malcolm X, you know, Fred Hampton, Medgar Evers, and so on. Did you feel like you accomplished much more given the divide that was going on outside of the court?
Well, we understood what was happening outside of basketball out in the real world. Particularly once Dr. King was assassinated, even before that, when the president was assassinated in Dallas, mm-hmm. You know, so the 60s was a decade of turmoil from Jump Street. Okay, so. Those are some of the things that we had to deal with. We understood that. And let me give the Knick audience something else to chew on. Mm-hmm. When we won three consecutive NAIA championship, and people said, what is the NAIA? What does that stand for? That is the forerunner of the NCAA tournament and the NIT. The first year when we won the NAIA, our coach, Don McLennan, legendary coach, he was at the elbow of Naismith in Kansas. Okay, he went to Kansas. Mm-hmm. He was at the elbow of Naismith. So John McLennan said, we want to play Bill Russell. And you have, we want to play them, NCAA. Mm-hmm. We petitioned to play in the NCAA. Mm-hmm. They said, well, you can't come to the NCAA. We've never had an all-black team at Madison Square Garden. Okay? So we went back the following year. We went back the following year to the NAIA and won it for the second straight year. And we have petitioned again to come to the NIT. At Madison Square Garden. And the Garden said, we don't accept black team at Madison Square Garden. So we went back for the third time. The first team to win a national championship in college basketball history. And we won it without public accommodations. We had to relieve ourselves in cornfield. We couldn't go into restaurants. We couldn't sleep in hotels. We couldn't do any of those things. They said, nigga, you don't have any place here, okay? That was the world that we were living in. The world that young people today understand when they deal with Facebook and those type of platforms. We had to live the real world. The real world when Dr. King had to go to jail and the jailer come in and said, your first name is nigga. Your second name is boy. So, you know, those were the issues that we had to deal with. The second time we won the championship, we got on the plane coming to Nashville, Tennessee, they had called up and said, in Kansas City, a bomb has been put on that airplane. You better come back to Kansas City as quickly as you can. The airplane pilot said, as soon as we hit the ground, don't go for your baggage or anything. We've got to get out and slide down and get out of here as quickly as we can. When we did get out and get back to Nashville, a bus was waiting on us to go to downtown Nashville to sit in so we could stand up for the Constitution that the forefathers who owned slaves and couldn't live up to their own words. So, you know, those are the things that I like to talk about because it becomes part of what I call the dream paradigm. Let your hopes and dreams take you to where you want to go. And what I love about America, the writing, the Constitution, all of it is great, but we have so much farther to go until we achieve what we really want to achieve.
And it seems like those times of great adversity was a source of strength for you, right? In pursuing your dreams.
I had an unquenchable thirst to live my dream, and that's what has transpired. I still have dreams. And one of the major dreams I have, there's the Dr. Richard Barnett Foundation. Mm-hmm. And we're dealing with sports. We're dealing with business. We're dealing with education and technology. And really talking to young people and trying to inspire them to live their dream as we hand that baton off to them. So we're looking to do a number of things. I've been in contact with President Dolan at Madison Square Garden, and one of the things we're excited about, the Knicks have become, and I'm sure the fans can appreciate this, very representative and competitive this year.
Yeah. What's been your thoughts of this current Knicks team?
Well, they've got young players, and with the coach, he's doing an excellent job. He's playing tremendous defense, and I don't think they're a championship team, but I think they're on their way, and with the right choices in the future, I think they'll be right back in the running in the coming years.
A couple more questions for you. The fallback baby jumper nickname. who bestowed that nickname on you, and where did it come from?
That's from the playground. I knew when I shot that it was going in, so we could fall back. Okay, fall back, baby. Exactly. Add this to that soliloquy. Mm-hmm. Too late. Fall back, baby.
Never to be duplicated. You know, that was one jump shot that you, to this day, you do not see that jump shot emulated in the NBA. Totally unique to Dr. Dick Barnett. Last question for you, Dr. Barnett. How would you like to be remembered? What will be the legacy of Dr. Dick Barnett?
As I indicated in that little rap that I gave, making a contribution and helping Black people step back on the stage of history as free, proud, and productive people.
Dr. Dick Barnett, I thank you so much for your time. For all your contributions to this society, both on the court and off the court, going through, as you said, some of the toughest times in our history, and keeping your head held high and achieving nevertheless, always pursuing your dreams. Those five principles, this is definitely something that, I'll be writing down and taking forward as I pursue my passions as well. So I absolutely and grateful for your time today, and hopefully we can get involved with the foundation down the road and the fans as well.
Fantastic, Casey. Looking forward to working with you.
Thank you so much, sir, and enjoy the day.
Thank you.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.